Welcome to The Precinct and the Practice, where the conversation is free, but this talk ain't cheap. Broadcasting from a studio in the North CTE Law and Public Safety Center and streaming on NPS Voices, I'm your host, Miss Alexis Love. Consider this your first warning. We're going in. Well, hi.
Hi.
I'm so glad everyone's here today. In law enforcement, we often talk about the precinct as a physical building or a patch on a sleeve. But today, we are looking at the practice from the inside out. We are exploring how leadership can transform a century of tradition into a future of rehabilitation and community trust. Our guest today is the architect of that transformation. She's a veteran deputy turned chief executive, but and a clinician with a background in family therapy and the first woman to lead the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office in its long history. Sheriff DeWanna Witt, thank you for joining us on the North Side.
Thank you for having me.
Along with Sheriff Witt, we have, I should have introduced first, our co-host, Sanai.
Hello.
And we have my other co-host, Muhammad.
Yo.
He's so chill. I can't stand it. Well, to set the stage, we're just going to jump right into it, Sheriff. You've moved from patrolling the county as a deputy to leading the entire office. What was the one specific gap in the practice that convinced you that you had to be the one in the sheriff's seat to fix it?
Well, as somebody who's actually from this community, sorry, North Siders, but I'm a Southsider. I graduated from South High School. Ugh. But, you know, to grow up in this community and see where we were at and where we're at now, you know, I think for leadership roles, it's very important for you to be a part of the community. We've been hearing for years is that the community wants the people that are patrolling its streets to be from the community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not just something where I flew in. I grew here, right?
Right.
And, you know, to say that with this profession, I will say that I never saw it coming. My thing has been to be who me and my siblings needed to see with everything that we saw in our community and our household. And, you know, I think that our kids, especially kids that look like us, I always say, if you can see her, you can be her. If you can see him, you can be him. So it's showing up and showing out so that we make sure that we give our young people, inspire them to follow their dreams despite what society may have them think.
That's good.
Law enforcement is often caught between the safety of the collective and the rights of the individual. In an era where the community trust is fragile, how do you define a win when a decision makes the county safer but might be unpopular with the public?
Well, it's got to be public safety over politics. You know, it's always about people. And again, when you are somebody who is just a part of that very community, it makes those things very helpful. I think like decisions that I have to make, you know, I try to tell myself all the time, define, don't defend. Mm. Define, don't defend. And what I mean by that is, you know I didn't have the traditional background that most people would think that law enforcement people have. Something that I learned early on in my career was my story was meant to be told. Because when you have people going out there and in the form of law enforcement, you can't expect them to have all that lived experience. So it's not good enough just to say, okay, I have this experience, but define, don't defend, educate people. Mm. Don't forget where you came from. Don't forget those lessons in life, the goods and the bad.
That's good.
So as we know, the HOPE program focuses on rehabilitation within jail walls. From a leadership perspective, how do you push back against the tough on crime critics who argue that a sheriff's job is strictly punishment and not social work?
Nope. Thank you for that. So it's ironic that before I was in law enforcement, my original profession was my original degree is chemical dependency and family therapy. So I've already came into this profession with that kind of a lens of a social worker in a way. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I used to actually get teased by people in this profession, like, you know, you're not a social worker. Well, you know what? When you're in this field, you are everything. You wear many hats. But then when we talk about the HOPE program at the jail, that stands for helping others by providing education. What people need to know about the Hennepin County Jail is we're a pretrial facility, which means the reason that people are being held at this point in time, they have not been convicted for. Mm-hmm. They are still a part of our community. Because it's a pretrial facility, about 80% of the people that come there go back into their communities. So what I would say to the people that push back is, why wouldn't we want to make them better? You know, we offer GEDs, we offer diplomas, life skills. Or you, when you think about people who have chemical health challenges and things like that, why wouldn't you want to provide that while you have their attention and they're away from those daily stressors? We should always want people to go back to the community to, and being better than what they were before they came in. Jail time should not be wasted time.
Right.
You have to keep trying to stimulate people, because if they don't have any hope, we're going to be spinning our wheels all the time. So we provide it. I don't go into it thinking that we're going to save the 800 people that we have in our custody. But I will say this, if I can save, if I can change one life, why isn't that good enough?
That's good.
Yes.
That's really good.
So when your term as a sheriff eventually ends, what is one systemic change you made? Not just a single event, but a change in how the office functions that you hope will still be placed in 50 years from now?
Thank you for that question. So I'm going to answer that by saying humanity. Mm-hmm. Treating people in a humane way. You know, again, I did not see myself going into this field, but I can tell you what it feels like when you see somebody who's supposed to help you who does not help you. I can tell you what it feels like to be overlooked and not heard. And, you know, from a leadership standpoint, that is what people need to see, because there's this idea, somebody like in my position, that we don't care. There's this idea that you can't be compassionate and empathetic and still hold people accountable. And we can do all of those things. That's what we do as parents all the time, right? That's going to hurt you more than it hurt me. but it's leading and being that authentic person. You know, I will say early on in my career, you know, where I had this idea that I had to conform to be who they wanted me to be. I had to teach myself, you're good enough just by who you are. But being that authentic person and letting people see the true you, mm-hmm. why am I not good enough? And that's what we have to tell our young people all the time. You're good enough. There will be so many pressures to try to conform you to what society would want you to be, but you're not happy as that person. You're happy being you. Mm-hmm. And so actually not just talking the talk, but walking the walk and letting people see that. I remember one of my deputies came up to me, though, and he looks at me and he goes, you're actually the real deal. And I was like, what does that mean? There's this thought that I'm supposed to not be approachable, right? Mm-hmm. That I'm just a tell people what to do. But when you actually show people that compassion, that empathy that you have for them, and showing that it is okay to wear a uniform and be human, that is what I want people to start seeing. That is what's going to help them as they go out into the community and dealing with people that are different from them, have different lived experiences than them, is actually letting them be themselves and telling them you're good enough who you are, and we're not all supposed to be the same.
Mm-hmm. I think we're more alike than we are different anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all have issues and problems that jump up. So being just your authentic self and approaching a situation with compassion and empathy, that right there builds trust
mm-hmm.
in the community and in the law enforcement. When you see a law enforcement person that's like that, like what you're saying, just being authentically themselves,
mm-hmm.
they have to first know who they are.
Yes.
Man, that's awesome. I'm glad to hear a law enforcement personnel say that out loud, because it breaks the stereotype.
So yes, it does.
Kudos to you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, babe.
As you look at the next 5 years of law enforcement in Minnesota, what is the unseen challenge, perhaps involving technology or mental health, that your office is preparing for today that the public hasn't even realized might become a threat in the future?
Right. Well, we have to normalize those conversations, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said it earlier, if people don't have hope, we have nothing. And so, you know, by normalizing those conversations and talking about what the needs are, again, you know, I could talk about the 800 people that we have in our custody, and not just pretending like they don't exist. Mental health is a real thing. And to tell people, and people who actually wear the uniform this as well, to say, I'm not okay has to be a thing. Mm-hmm. You have to normalize that. When I think about the next 5 years and the challenges that we're going through now with financial restrictions and things like that, I'm actually worried about where are we going to be in 5 years, because there's so much more that we should be putting into preventative efforts instead of always dealing with the back end and throwing people in jails and hospitals. What are the signs? What are the signs that are that we could potentially make sure that people don't get to that breaking point? That is very important. And so, you know, the financial stressors right now that this state is going through does worry me. As you know, I know already it's been questioned about me. What are my statutory mandates? And what I mean by that is, what does state statute say you must do? Well, let me tell you what state statute doesn't tell me what I have to do. It tells me I don't have to offer those programs, such as the HOPE program in the jail. It tells me that I don't have to have a community engagement team whose sole purpose is to be out in the community building those relationships. But you know what? Those are mandated by humanity. Mm-hmm. You know, that is what God would want me to have done. But those are the kind of things, you know, we cannot go backwards. We cannot go 20, 30 years back in policing. When you have people who are truly community oriented, but I have to make these choices on the things that I know must still need to be done, as somebody who is invested in this community, but now I'm going to be handcuffed because of budgets. So, you know, it's about being creative right now and keeping that hope and figuring out what it's going to do, because we do have to think what's going to be going on in the next 5 years. The warning signs are here. Mm-hmm. And so prevention has to be a big part of the decisions we make, because I'm going to tell you, if you're always trying to catch up, you're going to be exhausted. I would rather keep up. Right. I see what's in front of me, so I want to deal with it now, so I'm not always playing catch up to what we see coming.
You said something interesting before I get to the next question, because I want to just pause on what you said about the breaking point when people are getting in trying to prevent. I understand you're saying, like, the financial situation in the state of the world right now is concerning, and it is. But then you have, on top of that, lifing for people. Mm-hmm. Parents pass away. My father just died. You know, accidents that are happening, tragedies, things that are just happening in people's lives on top of the fact that we're in the financial crisis that we're in. So people can get to that breaking point a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. And not just regular folks in the community, people in professions, you know. The doctors that you go see, they have lives too. Mm-hmm. You know, the law enforcement, the lawyers, the everything. So when you notice something in your people that are under you that may need a break or may need some time off or something happened, I mean, it's the same approach. It's that community approach too. Yes. And I get that. And I appreciate that you think like that, because so many times people are locked into this system where the machine must run and you have to stay, you know, in it no matter what's going on in your life. And sometimes you're just like, I can't, I gotta stop. I gotta get off this train a minute.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. You think about the people before the system.
Yes. And that's, we need more of that.
We do. We absolutely do. Even like in the school, like, mm-hmm. our students went through, this was I hate to say it, but it was a hellish school year, mm-hmm. you know? And I mean, it started off with Ascension, and then a couple months later we started Metro Surge, and mm-hmm. you know, and students are mentally like exhausted.
Yes.
And they can't focus on schoolwork, and they're trying, but, and they want to graduate and get to the next year, but this has been one crazy school year. So
you know, that's one of the things, yeah. though, that's so important too, is we have to remember our purpose of making sure that our kids have a future, mm-hmm. right? And paying attention to them. What are they saying? What are they not saying? And, you know, that's always been something that's been really important to me. Like, for example, I have what I have a call a community advisory board. I have one that's adults. And then I have another community advisory board that consists of 10th through 12th graders from various schools in Hennepin County. but it's they need a voice. Mm-hmm. And we as adults, it is so important for us to connect to them and listen to them. Right. You know, one of my favorite questions asked at the student community advisory board is like, how is us adults messing up y'all lives today? They will always have an answer for that.
Yeah.
But we have to make sure that they're included. We have to make sure that they are listened to. And we have to continue to encourage them. They should not be dealing with all of these things that are going on right now, and it is affecting them. It so is. Again, when we think 5 years out, what are we giving them now to make sure they are the healthiest young adults that they can be?
Right. That's good. Yeah, thank you for that. Well, since you hold degrees in chemical dependency, family therapy, police science, most people see those as very different fields. But you've combined them into a single career. And how does your clinical understanding of addiction, which I think you kind of answered this already, but just to kind of hone in a little more, how does your clinical understanding of addiction and family trauma change the way you train your deputies to handle like a standard 911 call?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'll tell you this, you know, with all of those lived experience to include personal and my education, again, it's you can't keep that to yourself. I'm also an adjunct professor at Inver Hills Community College. I teach juvenile justice and American corrections. Mm-hmm. And when I am doing that, when I am teaching, they have their textbook. But now how do they apply those theories that they're learning to real life? You have to have conversations with people, our young people. How do they connect with things? Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, early in my career, I kept all that stuff to myself because I was worried about how people would see me. Mm-hmm. Would they think I'm weak? Would they think I'm trustworthy and or not trustworthy and things like that? I learned the hard way that my experiences happened because I'm supposed to educate people to that, because you cannot possibly train a police officer for everything they're going to see.
Right.
But you know what? If we can talk to people before they're in those situations, give them different perspectives, they will likely be a better person when they're responding to a very diverse community. You cannot train for everything.
Right.
We are human beings. We're every human being is follicle, but I'm perfect. If y'all ever talk to my daughters, I'm perfect. Just and I, perfect. No, but we're not, right? Okay. So being able to talk about our experiences, the good and the bad, and again, moving us away from this is only happening to me. It's not true.
Right.
We have so much in common, as you said earlier. Mm-hmm. But I will say to people, it's you're not meant to keep that to yourself. How do you help other people so that people are not in that same situation as you are, whatever it is, good or bad?
Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that that what your biggest struggle is, when you come out of it, that's what you're supposed to teach on. Mm-hmm. Because think about it, an addict that comes out of an addiction and masters it, has more compassion for people going through that.
Yes.
So they can definitely, like, it could easily become their calling to help people, bring people out of that, because they know what it takes.
Yes.
So, yeah, I love that.
It's kind of like therapy 101. You think about, like, one of the things you do not say to someone is, I understand when you haven't been there and you have no idea. So when you have somebody who has those experiences where they could actually connect to say, no, I was there, mm-hmm. and here I am now, giving that person hope, you know, to come out of whatever that situation is so important. Again, let's stop shaming people for being, for having these imperfections. Mm-hmm. How do we lift each other up? How do we truly mean everybody deserves a second chance? Last time I checked, God gave us a whole lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be doing that for each other.
Yeah.
You know, when I think about community as a whole, our communities, we need to get back to, I'm sorry, I know y'all young, but like the 80s when the neighborhood took care of the mm-hmm. people in the neighborhood. Everybody knew who everybody was. And if your neighbor up there said something to a kid, okay, then you better not be acting up, you know, and that was okay, instead of combating each other when somebody checks your kids, if you will.
Yeah.
We need to bring that neighborhood back, and we need to take care of each other in so many ways, and not treating people as if we're perfect, but you're not,
right.
and giving up on each other. We weren't meant to do that. We were meant to take care of each other.
True. True.
So being first often comes with a dual burden. You are expected to be a perfect leader for the agency while also being a symbol of hope for the community. During the most difficult moments of your first term, which of those expectations felt heavier? And how did you navigate the scrutiny that comes with breaking a century-long streak of leadership?
It's hard because I know people look at me different. Mm-hmm. They scrutinize my decisions differently. But I got to come back to that center point. Who am I? Why am I doing this? What is my purpose? What is that moral compass? You know, last time I checked, you know, you shouldn't worry about people that criticize you. And you wouldn't want to be in their shoes, right? You know, it was my first week in office when I got this message and where this person wrote to me, if you weren't Black and if you weren't a woman, do you really think you'd be in that position? And it took me a while to answer. But once I calmed my nerves, my response was, if you check your history, you'll find out that I'm more educated than anybody that's held this office. If you check your history, you will find out that I was elected from a higher law enforcement position than anybody that's ever held this office. So if I was a white male, would you be asking me those questions? And here we are almost 4 years later. He didn't respond yet. So, you know, and think about that. And then, you know, I can tell you like one incident where we had two people who quit working at the jail. One happened to be a deputy of color. The other one was a white person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was trying to figure out, because I am that person who will call people like, what's going on, you know. But I did call them both. The white male, you know, he talked about how he had another opportunity. He was moving away. Made sense. The Black deputy, he talked about some issues that he had. So when I took that back to my administration, my jail administration, and talked about that, the next meeting we had, they asked me, they said, well, people want to know how come you talk to the white deputy and not the Black deputy. And I'm like, what makes you think I didn't? And they're like, you did? And I was like, yeah, there were no issues, so why would I bring it up? Mm-hmm. You know, but then my follow-up question was, I want to know what I did to make you think that I would have done that, you know, but really challenging that, right? Don't shy away from that stuff. Actually challenging people on right. it, you know, and I will tell you that the ministry, they're really good people. I've known them for years. Mm-hmm. But that was the question that it was like, okay, was I doing like a favoritism based off of race? You know, I am all about elevating everybody. I don't care what the color of your skin is. And I also believe in you can only help people who want to help themselves. Mm-hmm. And so, but again, leading by that and not shying away from those tough questions, you know, where I know people, well, I just gave you two examples of where people are going to challenge me that they probably wouldn't challenge somebody who did not look like me. Mm-hmm. You know, being actually the first Black female sheriff in this entire state. I know people are looking at me. And then to your question, that makes it scary because I don't want to mess this up.
Right.
Right. I want to make sure that I pave the way for others to do this. And so that puts an additional pressure on it. But at the end of the day, the promise that I had my command staff make me was don't let this job change me because I had to fight hard to become the person that I am.
You did.
I'm not worth giving. I'm not going to give her up. So,
amen. I want to pause right there for a second. That's good. The truth is, you know, I understand you saying, I don't want to mess this up. I don't think you can if you tried, because you're just not that person. You care too much. And how you move, how you've been moving, and how you continue to move is just a testament to who you are. So I'm excited to, like, see where things are going. And, you know, to piggyback off that question, this is just out of the blue. I don't even know if I have this question down, but like you're wanting to be the leader that you are, and you're wanting to how do I frame this? just who you are as a person is a testament to everything that you're doing, right? I kind of lost my question, but it's going to come back because he asked you, like the heavy expectations and navigating scrutiny. Oh, yeah, you're under scrutiny. So what I was thinking when you were talking was like, man, it's got to be hard to feel like everybody's watching you and you could screw this up, but you won't. I know that you won't. Mm-hmm. You haven't, but that also means that I think the rest of the world just needs to take a chill pill and a break and just let you be you. And understand that it's okay to let you rise, let you allow other people that look like you to rise up if they're worthy of the positions. Because mm-hmm. I know that there's people out there like, well, she black, I'm black, I should get it. No. Mm-hmm. Did you put in the work?
Exactly.
Did you? Because you put in work. Mm-hmm. And that's very evident. And this isn't a free ride for somebody. It's maybe a slightly bit easier for people of color to be seen.
Right.
But if you're not seen doing work and being a person of integrity, don't expect to get a hand up. You have an opportunity, a window open to work hard, to show and prove, and then to get the opportunity, more opportunities. That's kind of where I was at. So
it's, you know, like, one of the things, and it seems to have been a common theme that somebody was putting on like our social media page at the sheriff's office, calling me a DEI sheriff. Mm. And I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. I definitely earned it. You're right. Definitely earned it. DEI. Mm. Yeah, you're right. But, you know, again, just knowing that there will always be people to come at you no matter what, which is why it's so important to make sure, again, that our young people are comfortable with themselves. Because we can't change what everybody else is, how other people or society will chip away with them. So that is why we have to make sure that we are raising and grooming strong kids, because there are some mean, ugly people out there.
Yeah.
Haters. Yep. And we got to make sure that they know who they are and they're comfortable with themselves. Whoever that is for them, that's what we need to make sure that they know it's okay to be themselves.
Yeah. I got messages from the haters, but I'll save it for later. So law enforcement often relies on this is how we've always done it type of, you know.
Famous last words.
Yeah. And to maintain order, that's how they've done it, right? So how do you distinguish between the traditions that provide necessary structure and the cultural habits that create barriers? Mm-hmm. And I'll ask the second part of that after you answer that.
Okay. Well, that's again goes back to being authentic, right? And I do not like that phrase, this is the way that we've always done it, because you know what? Things were done wrong. And, you know, when I think about tradition, when people talk about, well, this is traditionally how we've done things. Well, guess what? Last time I checked, life stops for no one. So as the world changes, you have to change with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that being said, when I think about those challenges in changing what we do, updating us, if you will, mm-hmm. That has to be a priority. It has to be a priority. And then being able to say, check yourself, including me. Mm-hmm. Check yourself and make sure you don't surround yourself with people who just think like you and who agree with you. If you really want something in public safety or public service, you have to make sure when you take that role, such as I have, I am accountable to everyone, despite our different views.
Mm-hmm.
And to encompass that in an agency is very difficult to do sometimes. But the other thing I tell people is the longer you've been doing this job, and I've been in it for 26 years now, we forget how, I'm going to call, normal people see us. And that's why it's so important to say, check yourself. You know, my community advisory board, they're not cops. Well, there's a couple who are retired, but they're people of different walks of life. And making sure, like, okay, well, if this is what I believe in, I shouldn't be afraid to say, here, look over that and tell me what you think. Be willing to be challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that you know that, you know what? What do they say? Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm checking myself before I wreck myself.
That's good.
So
what's one specific old way of policing that you've had to let go of to make room for a more inclusive agency?
That's a good question. Can you ask me that one again?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, like, if you can think of one of the old ways or traditional ways of doing things that you've had to kind of kick out the door to make room for an agency that's more inclusive, if you will.
Okay. I can think of one good example here. There's many, I'm sure. But, you know, when I went into this field, I remember being backgrounded. And because of my very family, colorful family, things in a lot of police contexts, not necessarily where I was a suspect, but I was mentioned in reports. Mm-hmm. But being shamed by that, you know, I will never forget that. Okay, now we're talking about over 26 years ago. Fast forward, you know, when they did hire me, and then I went back to school to become a licensed peace officer. They passed me over 3 times for the promotion. And so I asked for a meeting to see what was it that I was doing wrong, because that was my goal. Mm-hmm. And I want to know what I need to do to get to my goal.
Right.
And I remember my supervisor, who was a lieutenant, I was sitting outside the room, but I heard him say to the inspector, we call them majors now, but inspector, and then somebody from HR, he says, she has too many family members that come to jail. She knows people from the community that come to jail. We can't trust her. And then when I went in that room, they did not tell me that, right? They gave me some other answer.
Ooh.
But that's when I left the agency. And in 2019, when I was asked to come back, and, you know, the sheriff at the time, when he asked, he was like, I don't understand why you don't want to come back. And I said, I didn't forget how they treated me. And I told him the story. And he said, well, what if I told you that kind of stuff is still going on, and I'll give you the opportunity to change it? Well, that's all this has been about, changing it, making things better for the people that come behind. So, you know, challenging some of the things that come out of our personnel, like, okay, tell me about this background.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story behind a background. Like, I don't like the phrase where they say backgrounds don't lie. Okay, maybe they don't, but who's ever looking at it can see what they want to see through it.
True.
What is the story behind it? And this doesn't mean lowering standards, as some people say, lowering standards. No, that's not what that is. Right. There's a story. And for me, there's a difference between survival and criminal activity, too.
Right.
But looking at that and actually going in depth and not just saying, oh, I see what's on this paper. You're not good enough for this job. What's the story? Because also behind those life lessons, character is built.
Yes.
And when you're telling people to go out there and police people with all these different backgrounds, who better to do it than people who've been there, done that?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, we do have certain requirements to do this job, that there's some things that are that we cannot accept. And so that's what it is. But when there's that gray area, what's the story behind the background?
That's so good. That's good. It's not fair that, you know, if I have a brother that went to prison for selling drugs, mm-hmm. and was convicted of that, and then I have a cousin who, you know, had so many run-ins with law enforcement in a negative aspect, and then I want to get into law enforcement to do well, they look at, I mean, they're going to see my family members, but they're judging me based on them?
Yeah.
That's not fair.
It's not. You think about that happening, so that was, what, 2003? And you think about that being said then, and then fast forward to now. What is the community asking for? People from the community to be a part of their force. Mm-hmm. People who in the law enforcement that actually live in the communities that they police. That's what people were asked for. That's what we needed then. That's what we need now. And we need to stop falling into this idea that that means that you're lowering standards. No, you show me a perfect person and then I'll show you a perfect cop. Mm-hmm.
All right.
So personalities leaves, but the system stays. If we were to interview the Hennepin County Sheriff in the year 2045, what fundamental shift in the office operations would they point back to and say? That started with Dawana Witt's administration.
Well, let's see, I'll be 27 at that time. you know, when we think about history, right, you know, I do believe that people are going to remember me. in this position. But, you know, sustainability is really important. You know, I had a conversation with an affinity group. And one of the things I said to them is, you know, it's not good enough just to put people in positions because of what they look like or their gender or anything like that. You need to put people in those places, yes, looking at diversity, but making sure that when you're gone, those personalities, those characteristics that you want, stay. And so it's like, again, looking for that character, but, you know, how many years is 2040? That's a lot of years. But it's got to start from somewhere. And again, it goes back to like normalizing those conversations, being authentic, being who you say you are is so important. And then you hope that you, as you're putting people in these various positions, that they that's something that they also embrace and that they carry on for you. Is that that's what true legacy is. It's not just being here, okay, she's gone, she's done. But are any of those characteristics that I feel we strongly need in public safety left when I go, and it just doesn't change because of the difference of whoever the elected sheriff is?
Okay, so many young people in the Hennepin County feel a distance between themselves and the badge. You've prioritized programs like the Hope Hub and the Explorers Post. Why is it a strategic priority for your office to engage with the youth before they ever have a reason to interact with the legal system?
Because I know what it feels like to be that kid, to feel like you can't trust somebody in a uniform. I know how scary that feels. And, you know, with what everything we see going on in our communities, we need our people, our young people especially, to be able to ask for help and be able to receive that help. When I think about just even my time again as a young person, as a youth, to know that I needed help and I couldn't ask for it, it cuts differently. It truly does. But for our young people, I don't want them being afraid of people in law enforcement. But that means we in law enforcement have to show people that we're human too, right? You know, I will tell people, go up to an officer, a deputy, a trooper and say, hey, my name is such and such. What is your name? And then saying the same thing to people in law enforcement. Go up to somebody, ask them their name, how they're doing. People should not be like nervous because somebody in law enforcement comes up and says something to them. That feel, and I get it. I get the reason. Don't get me wrong. But that means something is wrong.
Yes.
Right? So it's humanizing this profession and making sure that we're not always just responding when bad things happen. Those relationships have to be built before the bad things happen. You know, oftentimes when we are responding to things, we don't look good, especially in community, especially if it's like a hands-on incident or something like that. We don't look good. But you know what? If you already have those relationships that are going there, you know, my mama might be like, well, I don't know what I'm seeing here, but I know that something's not right because I know the people that are working in my community. Relationships do matter.
Yes, they do.
And so being proactive and building them before things go wrong, it's not if, it's before, it will happen, needs to be a priority for every public safety agency.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You got any other questions of your own that aren't scripted? Well, that was good. We're going to lighten the mood a little bit because those were our deep dive questions. But now we have some lightning round questions for you. Here are the rules, okay? You have about 5 seconds to answer each question.
Okay.
Keep it brief, super like one word or two or whatever. And you can't overthink it. Whatever comes to the top of your head, ready?
Ready.
We just kind of go 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, okay?
Okay, but I'm saying 5 though.
Really?
Let me see what's number 5.
You know what? I wanted that one.
Okay, you know what? I'll go first.
Thank you.
Okay. Paper planner or a digital calendar?
Digital calendar.
Mm-hmm. Okay, uniform or business professional?
Uniform.
Morning person or night owl?
Night owl.
Window seat or aisle seat?
window.
Oh, okay, and then what is your walk-up song when you need to get in the zone?
That girl's on fire.
Oh, that's good, Alicia Keys. That's good.
That was my campaign song.
I was not expecting that.
I wasn't either, but I like it. I like it. Okay. What's the best spot for victory lunch in Hennepin County?
Ooh, any place to cook a good steak. No, Fogo de Chao.
Ooh, good. Okay.
What is that?
Ooh. Oh, we have to go.
Yes.
Okay.
It's on Sheriff.
We gonna make Bailey pay for it.
Amen. Bailey, you taking us to Fogo?
Sure.
Yeah.
Beach house, cabin in the woods, or a mountain peak?
Beach house.
What is your absolute dream car?
I don't know. I'm an SUV type of person. Okay. And I'm going to tell you, I've had a lot of them. But I'm going to tell you, it doesn't sound great. But people are going to be like, what? But my favorite SUV of all times are Tahoes.
Okay.
So.
Okay. She like the big body.
And I've had them all. Yeah, people move out of your way when you're in those.
I know. Like, you could have just said a semi. Like, I just want to drive a semi. Yeah.
I think I will be running over all kind of corn. I have no.
Okay. Investigative thriller or a feel-good romantic comedy?
Investigative thriller.
Okay.
Mentoring a rookie in the field or balancing the department budget?
Mentoring, right? You meant mentoring.
Yes.
Yes, mentoring.
Okay, I figured that'd be.
Okay. In just one word, what is a number one trait a North High student needs to lead the North, to lead Hennepin County one day?
Believe.
Well, that's good. I'm so excited. That was good. You passed the lightning round. Well, Sheriff, you have any questions for us before we close out or anything?
No, I just thank you for the opportunity. This was fun and I needed it. So
yeah, we needed it too. I'm so glad you came. This was great. I'm not ready for you to go. Thank you for showing us that the strongest systems are built with compassion and courage. For the precinct and the practice, I'm Alexis Love, and we'll see you next time.